Okay, so we are going to discuss temporal probabilistic models today. I hope you read the chapter. One thing that I want to mention is that the chapter, of course, talks about a whole bunch of things. The specific things that I want us to understand here, in particular, is dynamic Bayes networks and how Bayes network techniques are extended to work with dynamic Bayes networks. Okay, which is what I'll actually focus on today. And then there are special cases of dynamic Bayes networks, which even before the word, the phrase dynamic Bayes networks existed, these special cases existed anyway. Kalman filtering is a special case, you can say, of dynamic Bayes networks. And hidden Markov models are special cases of dynamic Bayes networks. They can have algorithms that are specialized for them. So the general algorithms that we talk for DBNs will still work for them, but they will have more specialized algorithms that are more efficient. And I might only get to them next class, but mostly today I want to focus on dynamic Bayes networks. So it's sort of, the chapter is goes the opposite way. I'm going to DBNs and then going backward. The reason I'm interested in dynamic Bayes networks partly is because actually in fact, there are two ways of figuring out how to understand this chapter in this discussion, given the rest of the course that we have done till now, okay, and what we'll be doing later. One is, of course, we, in the beginning of the semester, we talked about state estimation, okay. In particular, we had seen this picture. This is, I don't know why the top is gone, but anyway. We have seen this picture. Remember, there, if you have a belief state and you do an action, you get a new belief state. Then you take an observation. Okay? Based on that observation, you may be able to figure out which part of the belief state is consistent with the, you know, observation and remove all the ones which are not consistent. Okay? So in this case, it turns out that both are still consistent. Okay? And then you do another action. When you do another action, you get another belief state. And then you get an observation, and then that can cut down the belief state. Okay, this is basically what happens to an agent. You know, if it is a general, if it is executing a plan, then it has a stochastic or non-deterministic dynamics. So then it, and at any point of time, it only has an information about the distribution of its state. Right, because it may not know exactly where it is. A belief state is basically all the possible states you are in without the distribution information. So it could be any distribution, you know. But today we will talk about the stochastic version of the belief state, where not only will I give you the states, but a distribution corresponding to those states. So I'm giving you more information, you know. So, but when we looked at this picture, we knew that, so when I have a belief state, then I do an action can be either deterministic or non-deterministic in the past. Okay, if it is deterministic, the belief state size doesn't increase. Right? If it is non-deterministic, the belief state size can increase. Okay, and then observation in that context was that observations were always deterministic. If you saw an observation, then it's for sure. In fact, the problem, of course, is in the non-deterministic, you know, until you start talking about probabilities, if you got an observation that you're not sure of, what exactly are you going to say? Maybe, suppose here if I said, maybe I'm in room B and it's dirty. That doesn't change anything because the size of the belief state remains exactly the same as before. Okay? So it's not so much that the world is full of deterministic observations, but that in the non-deterministic model, if you don't have deterministic observations, you may as well not have observations. There is no way of using them, right? Okay, so you assume deterministic observations, and then basically you will take every state in the belief state, see if it is consistent with that observation. If it is, you keep it. If not, you kill it. That's what you do during execution. Remember, you could also be doing this whole thing during search, where if you decide to do an observation action, then the observation might come O1 or O2, and so the belief state gets split. The part that's consistent with O1, the part that's consistent with O2, and then you need to take both of them to the goal state. Okay. In the state estimation problem, you assume that you already have decided what actions to do. Mostly what you're trying to figure out, you the agent are trying to figure out, is where exactly am I after a bunch of actions. Okay. And one of the interesting things in state estimation is, even if you are in a world which has non-deterministic actions, and even if, since I'm only getting observations, that means I don't have the full observability. Right? If it's full observability, then state estimation is, you know, pretty trivial problem. It doesn't matter how shaky my hands are, I will use my hand to, you know, pick A on top of B, and then right after that I know whether or not A is still on top of B. Okay, if I am blind, then I put A on top of B, or I have bad eyesight, then I put A on top of B, I get an observation which might be saying, you know, like a thud, let's say. That means maybe something fell. Now maybe the block that I just put fell, maybe. Okay, so that gives me partial information about the state. Okay, and if I have the partial observability, one of the interesting things is, even though I started with uncertainty about my state, after some number of actions and the observations I get from them, I might be able to localize myself. I might be able to know exactly what state I am in. Okay. Now, state estimation problem, when we were talking about this, I mentioned in the beginning of the semester that in the non-deterministic scenarios, it's hard to get impressed by it. You know, it looks as if search is where all the action is. Who cares about this? Okay. What's interesting is, much of today's class, and in fact if you read the chapter, you realize that this is what we are doing. That's it. I mean, you could ask that chapter, you could look at that chapter and say, how come you're not doing search? How come you're not doing planning? The reality is that you did planning aspect of it in MDPs, except at the atomic model. And then we came back now to dynamic based networks, which are factored models, but then we are mostly looking at state estimation. Okay, which is a cheaper problem, which is an easier problem, which isn't even a problem worth spending time on if you have non-deterministic or deterministic world. Okay, but it is a much more interesting problem when you have stochastic world. One of the, yes sir.
Mm-hmm. When you observe something, then it's the chance when we actually,
No, this is basically, the assumption here is, when you observed, that's when. So you consider, it, you could do this in a dynamic world. So you do an action, you get an observation, right at that time, if you quickly do computation, you may be able to tell what your state is. Yes, yeah, of course. In fact, I mean, the point is, again, you could say whether or not, just because I have this, so here I know that the world, if I have a picture like this, I know that the world is it static? I mean, is it stochastic or deterministic? It's non-deterministic. Okay? The world is non-deterministic. Is the environment observable or partially observable or non-observable? Partially observable. Because if it is observable, then I don't need state estimation problem. The other one is static versus dynamic. I didn't say anything about it. If the environment is static, that means only I do the actions, which is a very reasonable thing to do. For example, you know, did I show you the particle filtering robot localizing itself in the room, which I'll show you again today? It'll make much more sense. Now, if a robot is walking around in corridors, you know, that's a pretty reasonable case of, the world is not moving anymore. You know, it's just trying to figure out where I am in. It's not that the lab is, you know, changing around the robot, although it's possible, you know, in a crazy scenario. Okay, so I would have this problem even if I have static worlds. If I have partial observability and I have non-deterministic dynamics, I'll have this problem. All the static versus dynamic does is make this problem harder, because I have to very quickly figure out where I am, because if I take too much time to figure out where I am, then the world has changed. Okay? So, and in fact, one can actually say that there is a stream of observations that are coming at you. And then you take an observation at a particular time, and then how long would you think about that observation to decide where you are? If you take too long, then another 15 observations came after that. Okay, so that's, for now, forget about the dynamic aspect. In fact, that makes problem only harder, but you know, it's hard enough. It's an interesting enough problem even without dynamic, dynamic world. So when you go to the stochastic world, then what we'll do is we'll still have stochastic actions. That means an action basically will have a transition model which says if I do it this in state, previously if I do this action in this state, I can get either this or this state. That's all I knew in non-deterministic. Now I will say I'll get this state 0.9 of the time, this state 0.1 of the time. So the interesting point of that is after I take this belief state and you know project it through an action, I get a new state distribution. So you now think of belief states not as a set of states, but a distribution. Okay, so essentially on the x-axis basically you have state S0 to S100, and then there is some distribution. If it is discrete, it will be a discrete distribution. If it is continuous, it will be a continuous distribution. Okay, the interesting thing is, in fact, without knowing much about the rest, you can say that suppose I started, a robot started with some uncertainty about its position, and it did some action. Okay, then presumably it's basically when it did an action, its uncertainty might, depending on the action, it might, uncertainty might increase. Okay, so for example, it's currently thinking it's most likely to be present in this state, S mu. Okay, and then it did an action. After that action, depending on the action, okay, remember actions can reduce the belief state, increase the belief state, all sorts of things. So if it bombs, then it'll know for sure which state it is in. Okay, if on the other hand it tries to go right or left, then it might actually do an action because after that action it might be in a it might be in a distribution something more like this. So now that is the mu t plus 1. That's the place where it thinks it most likely is, but then the uncertainty has increased. Uncertainty is the variance, right? And then if it looked, and then it basically, it might actually say, well, I actually got an information about what my location is. But that information is also iffy, okay? So that's the big point in the state estimation that we looked at previously. The information you get has to be deterministic because it's not that, if it's not deterministic, you don't know what to do with it. You may as well not have any information, because non-deterministic observation doesn't mean anything. Again, understand that. I mean, it's kind of, to me, I don't know, maybe if this is not a big deal for you, but to me it's important to know why are certain problems not there in certain cases. You know, if I think about a problem in stochastic, why isn't it there in non-stochastic or non-deterministic scenarios? It's because there is no such thing as non-deterministic observation. If you have non-deterministic observation, you may as well say, I have no eyes, because there's nothing really you can do to the belief state. Okay, whereas if I have stochastic, that means I allow numbers, then I can say, well, there is a very good chance that I am in this particular place. Okay, and in particular, furthermore, previously, what's more interesting is that actually the idea of deterministic observations is that if you are in ST, you will get OT observation. Okay, that's deterministic. Now, in the stochastic case, if you are in ST, you can get, so basically you know that you got observation OT, and there are numbers saying what's the probability that you will get observation OT given ST. If this is ones and zeros, that's deterministic observation model. If it's anywhere between one and zero, then it's a stochastic observation. Okay, if you remember in the rain umbrella scenario, you see an umbrella. In fact, one interesting question is, you could say, when I say uncertain observations, you can also say, I'm not sure whether I see an umbrella or not. Like the Tweety bird, I think I saw a cat, I don't know, you know. That's a different story. It's like, I did see an umbrella. Given that I saw an umbrella, what is the chance that I am in a certain state, what is the chance that a certain state is consistent with this observation? Okay, there you would assume that if there is an umbrella, you know, in a deterministic world, a deterministic observation world, If it's raining, you will have an umbrella. If it's not raining, you won't have an umbrella. Which means, if you have an umbrella, that means it's not raining. Okay. Whereas, you know, in our case, in the scenario that we had here, sometimes people bring in umbrellas because, you know, they just don't want to get tanned too much, so they'll be wearing, you know, getting an umbrella so that the sun won't fall on them too much. Right? So that's why there is a small probability that if you see an umbrella, it could have been not raining outside. Okay? So that's what's called the sensor model. What is the probability that observation occurs given the state ST? Now, in a non-deterministic case, the sensor model is ones and zeros. Okay? I can deal with the umbrella scenario in non-deterministic world. Okay? If I basically, all I have to say is I have to put either both ones and ones, I have to put these numbers to be either ones and zeros. Okay? So if I believe that sometimes umbrella might mean that it's not raining outside, then I really have to put one. So umbrella, it's not raining outside is consistent with umbrella, so that's one. And it's raining outside is consistent with umbrella, so that is one. Because of which you cannot actually cut down the belief state space, belief state size, even if you did see an umbrella. Okay? Here, on the other hand, you don't cut it down, you change the distribution. Changing the distribution includes, as part of it, cutting down state. If a certain state probability becomes zero, then you cut that state out. If it just reduces, that means you made it less likely. So you have more of a, you know, leeway. Okay? So essentially what happens in this case is then I might find that, okay, actually, so after the action, my uncertainty increased. But then based on my observation, I can then take into account which states are more consistent with the observation. And then that might lead me, assuming that the observation is useful, that might lead me, hopefully, to something like this. Okay, so it's like in the stochastic world of a robot, where it, when it tries to go left, it goes right, left, or top or bottom, let's say. Then after it does the right action, its uncertainty only increased; it didn't reduce. But then after it gets an observation, its uncertainty reduces. Okay, so state estimation problem is essentially what we'll be talking about mostly. And there are other problems that are relevant too, but state estimation is something that we talked about for non-deterministic worlds that become more interesting for stochastic worlds. That's one reason to look at what's going on in this class based on the past of this course. Now, as far as the future of this course is concerned, the reason this is interesting is it's an orthogonal reason. It turns out that if you go from Bayes networks to dynamic Bayes networks, what we'll find is the issue is making some assumptions, some structural assumptions. It'll become very clear as you read that if you don't, for example, make stationarity assumptions, what happens? If you don't make stationarity assumption, what happens? No. Shall I start waking up people who are sleeping to ask questions? Yes. Now, what exactly is the problem if I don't make stationarity assumption? I mean, who has read this chapter? No, no, that is dynamism. No, don't say no. So the dynamic world means if you take a snapshot of the world, that world may continue evolving even after that. But you guys read the chapter. There is in the very first couple of pages, they talk about we have to make the stationarity assumption. Why did they make the stationarity assumption? What problem are they trying to solve?
In case of rain, so if it is raining for past
2 days. No, but yeah.
So the factors that were there for past 2 days will also remain for the. I mean, those factors will not change. It may happen that it doesn't rain today.
So what happens, from what computational problem do you run into if you do not make stationarity assumption?
Well,
What?
Have to have a lot of samples.
Forget about samples. I mean, that's true, but it's true because of something completely different. Why is stationarity assumption important for this at all? If you didn't get that, then you just read yet another chapter, okay, went through it. It's a huge, huge difference. You are making an assumption about structure of time, okay? If you have stationarity assumption, that means if I know that T0 affects T1 this way, then I know that T1 affects T2 in the exact same way. T2 affects T3 in the exact same way. T3 affects T4 in the exact same way. If not, essentially I will need a huge number of parameters. A huge number of parameters. Yes, but the point is, by making the stationarity assumption, what you did was you were able to make the dynamic base, the specification of the dynamics very compact. So a dynamic base network really can be completely specified by providing slice 1, slice 2. How do you go from slice 1 to slice 2? And then if you want to go from slice k to slice k plus 1, exact same thing happens. Is this obvious? Is this something that we should be sure of? Every world would be stationary? No. What we are saying is, if the worlds are stationary, and if you can make an assumption that the worlds are stationary, then you can make a very compact representation of the Bayes network. Why this is interesting is that when you go from atomic to relational representation, again, you have to make assumptions like that about the structure of the world. Okay, we talk about, you know, next class or week after that, we'll talk about relational Bayes networks. What's the big deal about relational Bayes networks? The whole point about relational Bayes networks is the specification of the network should be done very compactly, even though there are a large number of entities involved. Okay, in general, for example, suppose you are talking about a Bayes network which talks about, you know, how, let's say, various kinds of diseases occur over various kinds of populations. Okay, you might say, for example, that the probability that a smoker gets cancer is the following. Now, is this for every smoker? Is this for one smoker, Tom, and another smoker, Mary? If you are in the atomic world, you would have to talk in terms of the individual entities, and in fact, you know, the results, individual cases vary, is the way the, you know, AM radio advertisements about all these miracle cures talk about, right? That's true. Individual results vary, and in fact, the probabilities for every individual could be different in the worst case. But if you are specifying a relational network, you are assuming that over a whole population, the same conditional probability tables will hold. Yeah, no, it's not ceteris paribus. What we are saying essentially is, if I am assuming that, you know, I made this assumption that, so for example, suppose I am talking about this RAIN model. Okay, I happen to know that the RAIN model cannot really be used the same way during winter as well as during summer. There are separate probabilities. Whole of summer, there is a set of probabilities that will hold between summer day 1 to day 2, day 2 to day 3, day 3 to day 4, day 4 to day 5. Winter, there is a separate set of probabilities. They'll hold from day 1 to day 2, etc. Now, if I make an entire stationarity assumption, I am going to lose accuracy. Okay, the thing that you have to deal with in representing the world is, without making assumptions about the structure of the world, you are sunk. Okay, we have small brains. I mean, in fact, you may have big brain, but your computers have very small brains. Ants are able to get by in the world. Okay, and they have to make huge assumptions about the world. The question is, what representational formalisms can take those assumptions and make computation easy? That's a very useful thing to ask yourself. Okay, if I only know atomic representation, if I'm in Bayes network world, I didn't come to dynamic Bayes network, let's say, then even if I make the stationarity assumption, what's the big deal? Just I will have a huge number of numbers, it's just that many of them are the same. Okay, to be able to make the stationarity assumption and use them in reasoning, is what sets dynamic Bayes networks apart from normal Bayes networks. Okay, and exact same reasoning occurs when you go from atomic Bayes networks to relational Bayes networks. Okay, anytime we say smokers, when you specify a relational Bayes network, you would say over a class of objects, these will be the probabilities. So then you instantiate the relational network over a small world. Okay, one interesting question that you will have there is, if you instantiate the entire network for the 15 people that are present in your world, then it will become a normal Bayes network. Then all you did was to reduce the number of numbers used to specify the original network. The reasoning itself doesn't change because it's now become a big network now. What would be useful is to have inference tasks, inference approaches, which will be able to use the structure of the network to reduce the inference. The same thing happens in dynamic Bayes networks. He talks about two approaches for dynamic Bayes networks. One is, you know, just unroll the network. Okay, and then that will become a normal Bayes network and use the Bayes network approaches. The other is use the structure of the network to improve the inference. And that's where the DBNs are different from, I mean, if you say I understand dynamic Bayes networks, then that's basically what you need to understand. What exactly do you, how do the exact methods and the sampling method get modified such that they use the structure of the Bayes network? So there are like, so from that point of view, looking at dynamic Bayes networks, it's not just about time. It really is telling you about how to specify a parametric network, which will be repeated multiple times to actually get the underlying full model. But then having said that, during reasoning, you would really like not to unroll. Unroll is a bad word. Okay? Unroll is a bad word. That means you have no better ideas. Okay, unrolling can always be done. If you can avoid unrolling, then that would be a better representational, that's a better inference task. These ideas will come except objects instead of time when you go to relational Bayes network. I would almost argue that if you think of time as an object, then dynamic Bayes networks are already relational. They are relational over time. There is no difference between T0 to T1 and T1 to T2. And similarly, there is no difference between smoker Tom and smoker Mary. You know, irrespective of them, they will always have the same CPT, probabilistic table. So there are two orthogonal motivations for doing this shoulder topic here. Okay, one is from beginning of the semester, which is state estimation. The other is towards the later part of the semester where we'll, and as I said, we are going into relational representation. Okay? Yes.
So, if I get this correctly, the assumption about time is simply like, for example, if you use HMM, tagging some contestants. The fundamental assumption about time is that the grammar does not change over time, so the HMM needs to be
correctly arranged. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Okay. So, again, when you make an assumption and use that, that's actually an advantage. Certain kinds of techniques cannot necessarily use an assumption, even if you give it to them. Do you see what I'm saying? When you are learning, I mean, these are the assumptions that are worth making because A, they make their your life simple, and then the question is, how do Bayes networks actually handle them? So that's the thing. Yes, sir.
So when we say when we're going from say MDBs to planning, to go back to what we did in the semester, when you go from MDBs to say factor planning, and you say that factor planning has heuristics that you can use, which
exactly. Yes, yes, yes. It's the same. I mean, as you go from atomic to factored and factored to relational, you are making assumptions about the world. If there is no assumption, if you live in one of those really bad worlds where individual results do vary quite significantly from individual to individual, you shouldn't waste your time learning relational technology. Because there is no difference between relational technology and atomic technology. In fact, there is no difference between relational technology and factored or atomic technology. Okay, if every state is completely different from every other state and there is no number of state variables that you can enumerate, whatever enumerations that I do, see, these are the 15 state variables, and these two states have the same values over the state variables. Don't you think they are the same? I say, no, they're not. It's still different. Then at some point of time, you have to give up and say, well, you may as well just go with atomic state representation, because this guy will never say two states are equal. Right? So when you put variable model, you are able to make two states equal just because they happen to be having the same values over the attributes. And similarly, when you go to the relations, you are essentially again saying certain objects will will have the same properties. So the in this particular case, either the dynamical or the probabilistic properties would be the same for an entire class.
And so it's the same thing with
not quite sure the connection.
So I guess what I'm saying is, so in machine learning, right, if you don't really have a classifier that will bisect these into different dimensions, right, you can actually keep on increasing it until you have as many dimensions as you have points.
Yeah.
And then you everything will be in its own space. But it's sort of like the relation thing where if there is no relation, if individual results do really vary for everyone, then there's no point learning the relation.
Yeah, again, to me, what the machine learning connection helps us make sense of is relational is a bias. Stationarity is a bias. Okay, suppose all I have given, I did not give the model. In all these cases, we start with the model, and then we talk about doing inferences in this chapter. Suppose I didn't give you a model. All I gave you is just observations from the rain, the umbrella rain scenario. You are supposed to find the model. I gave you observation, I had no other better work to do, so I gave you observation for a million days for umbrella rain model, the world. Okay? Now the question is, you need to learn the model for me. Okay? One idea is to learn a million sized dynamic Bayes network where each parameter is different. That would basically make no biases whatsoever. No biases whatsoever. The other idea is to assume it's stationary. In which case, essentially, the same million days become a lot more data for you. If you make bias, the same samples can be exploited much more effectively. Million days is nothing if you are actually trying to compute a million-sized dynamic Bayes network. It's, in fact, one sample. I need one more million day sample to get them. Okay? So now, who told you that it's stationary? When you come into this world, when you go into Mars, right, like if you see this umbrella thing happening on Mars, all your assumptions about Earth don't necessarily hold there. The point is, you will still make that assumption just to make learning feasible. Just like the whole object bias. Okay? So again, relationality is a bias. It makes learning feasible. Okay? And similarly, stationarity is a bias. It makes learning feasible. Okay? That's one way of thinking about it if the model is not given. The another way is model is given and somebody told you, here, I'll tell you how to go from T0 to T1. It's the same afterwards. That means I'm telling you it's stationary. Okay? And then the bigger issue in machine learning, of course, is what if it's piecewise stationary? There's a million days, but there is a separate model for summer, separate model for winter, separate model for fall. So then you have to look for a different hypothesis space, where it's a more complex hypothesis space, and so the number of samples for that hypothesis space will be smaller. So they may not be able to shatter the space. Okay, it's exactly like looking for a line, are saying maybe there are sine curves and looking for sine curves. Okay? Anyway, so that's the bigger picture of why we are doing this at this point in time, a rationale for it. Okay, so time and uncertainty, you looked at this stuff, and in talking about, so for example, this XT is the state of the world, and he's not, in this particular case, we are just assuming that it's just a single state variable, so atomic state. Okay? And so the if the state, I mean, this is obvious stuff. We have actually talked about it from the MDP point of view. If the dynamics are such that a current state depends only on the previous state, then it's Markov. If it depends only on the previous two states, it's second order Markov. If it depends on previous k states, it's kth order Markov. And then he talks about the fact that Markovness 2 is an assumption, just as stationarity is, just as relationality is. You know, Markovness also is an assumption. And if something is not Markov, you can make it Markov in a different space. For example, if the umbrella rain world is not stationary in the normal state representation, because it's different for fall and different for spring, what do you do to make it stationary? Add the variable season to the state. And based on the season, the CPT changes. That's it. Then it'll become stationary again. Okay? Same thing can be done for Markov. If it is second order Markov and you want to make it first order Markov, see what is it, the what part of the other state is actually happening, you know, the previous state, the one plus one last but one state is affecting me. And then, you know, extend the state representation. So that in this new state representation you could be first order Markov. Okay? So that's the point that they're making about this thing. And then the stationary process, this is a huge thing. As I said, it's an assumption about the world. And it's because it's stationary, you can talk about dynamic Bayes networks. Otherwise, there is no topic called dynamic Bayes networks. And because there are objects which are indistinguishable from each other, at least over certain properties, there is predicate logic. Otherwise, you don't need predicate logic. Each object is different. Okay. Thankfully, in the world we live in, while the extreme cases can occur, there could be, you know, five objects that are completely different. So there is really no equivalence classing going on. But then there are 2 trillion objects over which there are big equivalence classes. So we still learn predicate logic. Okay, and the same thing for relational models. You know, for relational probabilistic models. Okay. So this is the rain umbrella example, and you basically notice that he's giving two, in this case, you're giving two CPTs. First of all, you can see that this is just a Bayes network. Okay, here is a random variable, another random variable, another random variable. It just so happens these random variables, they're not completely different. They are essentially the same object at different points of time. So it's a class of objects temporally extended. Okay, I mean, I almost want to overload time is the same as object, because when you get to structural relational probabilistic models, this is like a very hot topic these days. It's really the same thing. You know, you're essentially saying here are a whole bunch of objects which have the same property. So it turns out apparently that this rain, this rain, this rain, they're all essentially the same rain variable except at different points. And because of which, if I tell you, and if I make the stationarity assumption, I tell you how rain at t minus 1 affects rain at t, okay, then I'm giving you that here. That's the conditional probability table. Okay, I'm providing the dynamics. Okay, now here's another interesting thing. So in this scenario, it looks as if it's just a process that you are just observing from outside. Okay, now if you are a robot, then you have a state, your state at 0th time, your state at time 1, your state at time 2, your state at time 3. These states are random variables. Now if it's a n by n grid, then you essentially have n square possible states. I mean, n square possible values this state can take. Okay, but you are not a complete spectator. If you are a robot, you actually do an action. You make a right action, let's say. Then based on the right action, so in fact the CPT would say if my current state is this and I do right action, the fact that the value this state will take would be S5 with this much probability. So in fact if I am doing the actions, again, where do the actions come in this CPT? Right? But basically, if in fact I'm an agent and I can do a right action and a left action, okay, and or let's say the rain in the same world, let's say rain today and rain tomorrow, and I'm sort of a God kind of an agent, you know, who has some effect on, well, let it be, you know, let it rain for some more days, or no, let's start winding down rain. Okay, those are my two actions. I'm kind of a demigod, not a full god. Okay, so if I say I will start winding down, it'll still take a couple more days before rain stop. If I say, oh, let's go for a few more days, it might actually stop tomorrow. Okay, but those are the two actions me, the god, can do. Okay, then I would say that these CPTs will now be in terms of two variables, the action variable and the rain at t-1, and they will still tell me whether rain will be there tomorrow or not. Right? If I've decided that it should continue raining and it's already raining today, there's a very high chance that it will rain tomorrow. If I decided it's to start, you know, let me fold it and it's raining today, there's a lesser chance that it will rain tomorrow. And if I decide let me fold it and it's not raining today, then it's even less chance that it will rain tomorrow. So throwing in actions doesn't change this. You don't have to be a spectator in watching this process. Okay? In robot localization, you will still basically be thinking in terms of these CPTs. Okay. The other question, of course, is whenever the states might provide observations. Okay, we will assume that the observations would be observed by yourself deterministically. That means the robot itself can tell whether there is an umbrella or not. And if it sees an umbrella, it definitely does have an umbrella. If it didn't see an umbrella, then there is a problem. I mean, so if they didn't see an umbrella, that means there is no umbrella. Okay. Now the question, of course, is if it is raining, what is the probability that you would see an umbrella? And if it's not raining, what's the probability that you would see an umbrella? This is exactly the same thing that we talked about in the state estimation model too. What, you know, a state will or will not provide an observation. Okay. The interesting thing, of course, is there we knew that because it's in the non-deterministic case, you could only use logical implications. That means ST implies OT, which means if not OT, then not ST by modus tollens. That's the only thing you can do in non-deterministic filtering. Okay. Here what you're essentially saying is if you saw OT, I mean, if you are in ST, the probability that you will see OT is 0.9. That means if you did not see the observation, you still have a small possibility that the state is ST. And if you did see an observation, you still have a small possibility that the state is not ST. So it's no longer logical inference. Okay? Not deterministic logic inference. Okay. Okay. So this is the sensor model, and all this is saying is what is the probability that you will see an umbrella if it is raining, that when it is raining, what's the probability that you will see an umbrella when it is not raining, and the other two numbers you can get. Okay, now the point of this is during the execution you will actually see the umbrella. Okay, so then you have to decide. You're not trying to figure out did I or did I not see the umbrella. You saw the umbrella. What you're trying to figure out is, given that I saw the umbrella, is it raining or not? You're trying to invert the causal model. Okay? Think of this as the disease. I'm sorry. Think of this as the symptom. This as the disease. You did see that the patient has runny nose, and you have a causal model saying if the patient has flu, they will have runny nose with 0.9 probability. Now you're trying to figure out, now that you saw this guy has runny nose, what's the probability that they have flu? Okay? The state is the disease, basically. Okay? So that's your Bayes network representation for that, right? This is the simplest kind of a scenario where essentially, you know, if you think of this, you can think of these as the, you know, one state variable states. One state variable state. So the state is actually completely defined in terms of one single state variable range. Okay. Now, if I have multiple state variables, I can still use this kind of a model. I will just basically have to say a state variable now is a multi-valued state variable. So suppose if I have rain and amount of cash and something else, okay, so then I would say my state, the single state variable is rain dash cash dash God's action, okay, and it will be true $20, let it rain. That's the value. So what you did was you essentially took the state variables and clustered them into a single super state variable. If you cluster them into a super state variable, you will basically lose all the advantages of factoring. You lose the advantages of factoring. So that means, so if the whole point is, you used to have states S1, S0, S1, S2, which are atomic, right? And then you said, no, they actually have internal structure. It has attribute A1, A2, etc., AK. And if you give those values for each of the states, you know exactly what the state is. Now, if you don't want multiple state variables, you can always go back to one single state variable by just saying it's a super state variable, A1 dash, A2 dash, etc., AK, which takes the values from the Cartesian product of the original state variables domain. Okay? Then basically you lost structure. You compile the structure away. No. You compile the structure away in this particular case. You essentially, instead of state having, you know, being defined in terms of multiple state variables, if your technology only allows you to think of state in terms of a single state variable, you can always come back to a single state variable. Just, you know, cluster them together. Okay. By the way, this is not, you have done this many times. In 471, for example, we had this scenario, cloudy, rain, sprinkler, wet grass. Remember this network? Those of you who took 471, right? And this is a bad network. We don't like this network because this is not a singly connected network. This is a multiply connected network, and it turns out exact inference on multiply connected networks is exponential. And we said, so I have an algorithm which will work only on singly connected networks in polynomial time. So it won't work on this in polynomial time. So we came up with a great idea for making it singly connected, which is cloudy, rain, sprinkler is one single variable, wet grass. Okay? Now it is singly connected network, so my algorithm will work. What did I give? What I gave was, previously these used to be small CPTs, this is now a much bigger CPT. Well, in this case, exponentially bigger CPT. Okay? I mean, if you keep doing this, you can also just say, well, I don't have any Bayes network algorithms. I just know how to deal with atomic probabilistic reasoning. Then I can combine all of these, cluster all of these into a single variable. That would be before Bayes networks, the chapter before Bayes networks, which is just doing state-based reasoning in probabilistic networks, state-based probabilistic reasoning. Okay, so all I'm saying is we did that there. You know, it might sometimes make sense if it's a largely singly connected network and it's just one place, it's misbehaving, it makes sense to make it singly connected by just connecting that out. So similarly, if you have in this scenario, it turns out there are, you know, a particular class of Bayes networks that you already read, dynamic Bayes networks called hidden Markov models, which work only under the assumption that each state has a single state variable. Now I have this, and they're very efficient. They basically use, you know, they can do more efficient reasoning for that special class. Okay, so the question then is, if I have, like, you know, one extra variable, okay, and it's just, you know, let's say my main variable is 5 valued, and then another variable which is 2 valued. Rather than give up completely on the HMM technology, I might just say this is 5 times 2 state variable. I mean a single state variable with 10 values, and I go back to HMM. The same way I went back to singly connected networks there. Okay, yes?
Why is that not combining everything into one, not like calculating joint probability? It is that, right? Because if you want to really...
Yeah, basically you would have computed the entire joint probability and kept it in front of you.
That is the basic state-based probabilistic reasoning which you do till now, and it's sort of like that. You need the entire...
You have to provide the entire distribution without factoring, yes. Okay. Yeah, in that case, there's only one CPT, which is the joint distribution. Yeah, okay, that's fine. That's a good point. Okay, so, but you may actually want to talk about factored model. Okay, if you have factored models, then what happens essentially is the previous state as well as each state can have multiple variables. And in general, you do want to differentiate, again, another structural point is you want to differentiate variables between evidence variables and state variables. The assumption is that, you know, even if in fact a particular part of the state can be observed, okay, you would just, if that's an observation thing, then you will call that an state, observation variable, okay, evidence variable, okay. So here, for example, umbrella is not part of the state. Umbrella is an evidence variable, okay. And in this case, so I have a scenario which involves essentially location. I mean, I guess it's like, a particle moving, a car moving, and it has a car's current position can be specified in terms of its current position and its current velocity. If you give that, then you can tell where will it be next, right? So x0 and x.0, which is the velocity, and then the dynamical model is how is the velocity affecting the velocity at the next time slice as well as the position at the next time slice. Okay, the velocity is only affected by the previous velocity according to this model, and the position is affected both by the previous position and the previous velocity, which makes sense. Okay, the more connections you put, the bigger the CPT table would be. Okay, fine. Yeah. Okay. So and then there is this extra thing about battery. The battery is an extra variable that they kept around, and the point, of course, is that I'm assuming you read this chapter, and originally he only had this, and then he said, well, the actual way the velocities vary over time depends on whether or not battery is still alive or dead. If it is dying, then the velocity will just keep reducing. Okay, and so they will talk about the battery's current battery strength, and then how it changes over time. And then there is a separate evidence variable on the battery, which is battery meter. Okay, now this sort of looks like normal Bayes network. The interesting thing is it is still a two-time slice characterization of the world, right? So essentially, at every slice, I only have three state variables and two evidence variables. Okay, and I explained to you evidence variables essentially are only connected to certain to the state variables. Really, they don't have to be connected to the entire state. They can be connected to just a particular part of the state. So remember, if in fact you are writing this as a hidden Markov model with all of the state variables converted into a single super state variable, then you would have to say that single super state variable affects both the battery meter and the current position. Whereas by actually separating them, you're saying only x1 affects this and only this affects that. Why is this useful? It's useful in multiple ways. It's useful because you now have to specify a smaller CPT. If you have to specify a smaller CPT, those among you, one way, I'm the guy who is giving it to you, so I have less work to do. If I didn't give it to you and you're trying to learn this model, it's an easier learning problem because you made this assumption. Okay? Now, of course, you need to be given this topology. Then you know that only these numbers have to be learned. Okay, so that's your dynamic Bayes network in a more general form. Okay? And this, both of them have the same exact semantics that, their stationarity assumption is inbuilt. That means to go from T1 to T2, I just copy over this part. And similarly, to go from T1 to T2 here, I will copy all these variables here, and the CPTs will be just copied over. Okay? Okay, so dynamic Bayes networks are templates for specifying the relation between the values of random variable across time slices. They're templated. These are called templated representations. And really, in, you know, in the relational Bayes networks too, they can be thought of as templated representations. Okay? So the simplest way to handle them is to get the full network, you just expand it, you unroll it. Okay? And unroll it and then start reasoning with it. Now, of course, we'll do better than that. If you want efficiency, you want to be able to use the existing structure. Now, the one question before we go for actually how you do the reasoning is, what kinds of reasoning would you want to do with Bayes network, with dynamic Bayes network? You know, it's a Bayes network, so any kind of reasoning is allowed, right? So if I give you a Bayes network, you know, which sort of looks like this, I could ask a posterior on something. I can say I have the evidence on some things, and I can ask for the posterior. Now, since in a normal Bayes network, I might provide evidence from anywhere. But in a dynamic Bayes network, it makes no sense to provide evidence in the inside one, because if you could view them, then why did you think that they were not viewable by the agent? Do you see what I'm saying? Okay. So assume that the evidence will be provided only over the evidence variables, maybe some of the evidence variables, and then you are trying to compute the posterior and the inside variables. So most of the questions would be computing the posterior and the inside variables. So posterior on the state variable. Okay. The only other thing, of course, is the only thing that you might be interested in based on the evidence is, if I have seen a certain series of evidence values, observations, and I'm trying to figure out which of the five models I'm, you know, learning from is the most likely model, then I might say which of the models will give the highest probability for the evidence that I just watched, the maximum likelihood model. Okay, that's the only time you actually talk about probabilities for the evidences. Okay, everything else will be posteriors over the state variables. Okay, so if you come here, then these are all actually, this one is filtering, which is essentially what is the posterior on the current state, XT, given all the evidence up to and including this state. So I have that if a dynamic Bayes network is like this, right, then essentially you can think of it in your own mind as it's unrolled to, you know, they call it semi-infinite, but essentially you can infinitely unroll it up to the time you care. Okay, the advantage is this has many more numbers, and I only gave you some of the numbers, and you just repeat them. That was the advantage in specification. So filtering essentially is, tell me where I am. That's what filtering is. That was the state estimation problem. So I am here right now. You know, I woke up this morning, I did a bunch of actions, I got a bunch of observations. Now I am here, and I got an observation just now. So tell me exactly what the distribution over the state is for me. That's filtering. Okay, that's like the minimum requirement you need. Okay, if a robot is trying to localize itself, it needs to know where it is. And that's what filtering is. Okay, so what I call state estimation problem is filtering problem in this terminology. Okay?
So in that case, it refers to filtering forward.
No, it's just up to here. So remember that one of the interesting things is, this is now, this is all past, this is all future, because this network will continue even though I haven't yet gotten the. So there is T0, T1, T2, T3, T4, and T5. Right now I'm at T5. Where exactly am I? What is my state distribution now that I'm at T5? And I have gotten, you know, umbrella yes, umbrella no, umbrella no, umbrella yes, until now. That's what I'm asking. Okay, so that is up to here. Now I can also ask a different question. Now that I am here, will it be raining 10 days from now? Will it be raining 10 days from now? That's prediction. Okay, is it raining now? Is filtering. Will it be raining 10 days from now? Is prediction. Now, when you're doing prediction, you can only use the knowledge you have of the current state and the transfer model, because you can't assume what observations you will actually see in future. Right? Okay? And the other one, of course, so those two are obvious, and both of them really are posterior distributions. So the first one is the posterior distribution on this variable. The second one is posterior distribution on one of these later variables, but state variables. Now the third one is kind of cute. It's smoothing, which is basically, now that I'm here, was it raining the first day? You might say, why the heck do you care? You already lived through the first day. Okay? First of all, you have to realize that in stochastic scenarios, we actually change what really happened 3 days back based on what happened today. Right? You know, it happens all the time. Can you guys think of an example? Really? So you basically wake up on some crazy, you know, sound, right? Some crazy sound, and then, so like this old man, I mean, I have to give very really bad examples. This old man was about to get married to this somewhat older, maybe less older woman in Florida. This is, if you read CNN, you get all these great articles. You know, as I said, it doesn't matter what happened to the rest of the world. He was going to get married tomorrow. And tonight, early hours of tonight, you know, this guy apparently has been a lifelong bachelor or something. Nobody ever walks around in his apartment. And early hours of tonight, he saw somebody walking in the apartment. So as a true red-blooded American old man, he took a gun and shot the heck out of the person. And then put on the lights and found that he just killed his wife-to-be. Okay, now if he did not kill, that's, you know, the killing part is macabre, but if he did not kill, at that point it looked like, wow, I think there was probably a, at that time slice, it looked like, oh, there's probably a burglar walking around. Let me just take, you know, let me wait and let me go all the way up to, you know, my phone and start calling 911, which is the more wussy thing to do, you know, not killing people. And while you are calling, then you hear honey or something from the living room. You got an extra observation. Based on that, not only do you know that this woman is there, you also know that this woman was there previously. Right? So you smoothed your estimation of the past.
Yes,
you can say, but I mean, the whole thing is probabilistic. So it's like changing your estimation of the past based on the extra observations you got in the future is exactly what smoothing is. Okay? Now, interestingly, smoothing would not have made sense. Suppose you only got observation here. You did not get any of these observations. Could you have smoothed? Or would smoothing have made any difference? Do you understand what I'm saying? So in my previous example, so this guy only hears some people walking in the living room. And then he goes up to the phone and he is calling. Okay? At this point, could he just say, oh, I think it's just my wife-to-be. Could he say that? No, because no extra evidence variables have been given. If you're changing your mind because you didn't know how to do Bayes network reasoning to begin with. Okay? If you had all the information previously and no more information has been given, if he's able to get more accurate estimation of the previous state without any additional observation, then I can say the following. Okay, look, I'm here. And I'll predict all the way to 15 days in the future. Then I'll smooth my way back to the current day. I should know more. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's like perpetual motion machine. I had not got any extra piece of evidence. I took my current evidence, propagated it, my current state distribution, propagated it to 15 days forward, became more and more and more uncertain, and then I smoothed my current state. In fact, you should be able to prove by understanding how smoothing works that in those cases, the smooth distribution is exactly the same as the filtered distribution. If there is no extra evidence, there is no reason for the smooth distribution to change. If there is evidence, smooth distribution can change. Okay, smooth distribution actually is useful. It's less useful for a Markov agent in working in the world, because that's over, that's past. Why do I care? You care if you want to learn. So smoothing is actually very important during learning of the parameters of the network.
You're saying that you're changing your path.
Your estimation of the path distribution based on the additional
information
that you got later on.
Okay.
I mean, think about the following thing, okay? So this guy, you go, you know, police go running to save this kid, you know, who has drowned. I mean, I don't know why I'm talking about these kinds of things. But, you know, the kid isn't breathing. So currently my filtered estimation is kid is dead 0.99, kid is alive 0.01. And then one more observation, which is the kid's hand starts moving all by itself. So now you can say, well, he was still not, I mean, so you could be one of these people who say he was dead before, he just miraculous, you know, there's a God made miracle and he became alive. Or you could say he was alive all the time. It's just that, you know, your estimation of his state was mistaken previously. And as the additional observations came, you have a better estimation of the previous state. Now, nobody ever cares in working in the world what happened in the past. I do care about the past if I want to learn from what you did. Right? And so if I need to figure out whether or not these guys should be put in jail because after they said this kid is dead, somebody kind of passed away and they put them in, you know, mortuary, and 2 days later the kid was kind of having fun in the mortuary and somebody finds, then somebody's jobs have to be removed. Right? That's when you see whether or not they could have smoothed and gotten a better estimation. If you could compute it and you didn't compute it, your job should be taken away. That's exactly what happened to the poor Northwest pilots. By the way, you know, no more laptops, right? You know, you will be 150 miles away from this class. So laptops are really bad. So there are, you know, those guys basically could compute exactly where they were, and they decided not to compute because they were doing their scheduling of crew scheduling, and so their jobs are gone. Okay, smoothing is important for learning.
Okay,
they're fired. So I have to keep track of the entire world for you guys. Looks like, I mean, it's not just. Okay, that's smoothing. And then the last one is also basically, this is also, so these are all, you know, distributions over the state variables, right? Posterior distribution. This is posterior distribution of the current state variable value. This is the distribution over some future state distribution value. This is the distribution over a past state distribution value based on the extra evidence you got till now. And then this is the most likely explanation. That's a cute thing. So you would think almost this is connected to this. What I said is, I mean, you are listening to me, and I have a beautiful accent, and you, as I'm speaking, you're trying to say, Rao must be saying the following word, the following word, the following word. Okay? And I completed an entire sentence. Now, each word, it could have been one of five different things. You are not interested in figuring out what exactly is the word he said five words back. You are interested in figuring out what is the most likely sentence that he just said. And if you don't, then you'll stop me and say, I want to understand what you're saying. Okay? The most likely sentence means, after I got all this evidence up to 5 days, I want to know what's the most likely sequence of the state values. In the rain world, it's less interesting. Why do I care whether it was raining first day, not second day, first, and then third day, then not fourth day? But in a sentence, if in fact each of these are words, and umbrellas are the speech phonemes you are getting into your ears from me, right? You are not just interested in figuring out what is the seventh word that he said. Sometimes you do want to. In fact, once in a while, you know, we would actually see that somebody has misspoken, and they would say they definitely did not misspeak, and then you almost have to record them and play it back to them and say, notice, you did misspeak, right? But otherwise, you're just looking for the most likely sentence. Right? And the most likely sentence is not, it's a posterior, but it's not a posterior on a single variable. It's a posterior on all the past variables, I mean all the variables up until now. And that's basically called the most likely explanation. The specific sequence of states, the specific sequence of states that caused this specific observation. Okay, and in fact, most likely explanation is used in speech recognition. Okay, and when you go back and read more, with this background, you'd see that HMMs, for example, most likely explanation as done in HMMs, there is a very efficient algorithm for doing most likely explanation in HMMs. That's called Viterbi algorithm. And the only reason you guys might know Viterbi is? What? No. Yeah, what else? Why was a poor professor able to name a school all by, there is no school of Common Party of Engineering. There's a Fulton School of Engineering. Fulton is not a PhD, right? So why is a professor able to get an entire school named after him? Because this professor must have made a whole bunch of money. The only people, it's like nobody is going to name things during your lifetime after you in US unless you give them money. Okay, right? There's no Einstein School of Engineering still, right? Or even science or physics. So why did Viterbi get to name? So what did Viterbi do that he got so much money?
Something related to communication.
Qualcomm. One of the most successful companies, Qualcomm. The guy started Qualcomm. Okay? So that's the reason it's named Viterbi School of Engineering, not because he figured out the Viterbi decoding, right? He couldn't have cared less. He would have gotten lots of citations, and bozos like us, would be very happy, but not USC. USC is a private school, okay? Anyway, so that guy, Viterbi, when he was doing work in speech recognition over HMM models, he invented this most likely explanation algorithm. Now, it's not that he invented it. It turns out he just pointed out that the normal approach, which essentially involves filtering, it turns out if you read the book, now that you have this background, maybe you should read it again, you'll see that the computing of the most likely explanation algorithm is very well connected to the computing of the filtering algorithm, except the summations are changed by maxes. So from the point of view of the structure of the algorithm, instead of doing sums, you do maxes. Okay? And he essentially then pointed out that you can do a dynamic programming approach where you can essentially, a dynamic programming approach means you need to only compute the most likely, the previous state, most likely one, and based on that you can compute the most likely next state. You don't have to repeat work. And so that becomes very efficient, and so it's like a big deal. In fact, it was invented in the coding theory. It wasn't even invented in the speech recognition. Okay, in coding theory, essentially what you're doing is you're trying to send a message, a corrupted message comes, which is the observed message. You're trying to figure out what was the message that was actually sent. And some of you are doing the same thing. When I'm speaking, I'm sending you a coded message. And, my accented phonemes are the codes, and you're trying to figure out what exactly was he trying to say based on that. So you're decoding me. Okay, that's where Viterbi did that. Okay? We ran out of time. We'll stop here. Next class, I'll do the Bayes network inference, both using the variable elimination method, which is the exact inference algorithm. To understand that, you need to understand how filtering is done recursively. Make sure that you at least understand that. And then I'll spend time talking about applying sampling methods to dynamic Bayes networks. To understand that, you need to remember what likelihood weighting is from the normal Bayes networks. And then we'll improve that significantly. And then that will get us to a very nice idea called particle filtering, which is which is actually the thing behind that demo. Okay? So essentially, what happened was it puts particles all over the place, saying they're all equally likely. And as it makes, its robot, it's making moves and recomputing its position and putting the particles closer to the parts where it thinks it more likely is. And actually, it's quite cute. When it's here, it still thinks it's a possibility that it can be here because this looks very similar to this given the sonar readings. Okay, not for you. You can see the entire layout, so you can say, oh, what a stupid robot. But you know, if it only has sonar reading from the walls, those things look similar. Okay, which is basically dynamic based networks application. Robot localization is very much on dynamic based networks. Now, we may not get into it, but normally if a robot goes into an unknown environment, it needs to both find out the map and figure out where in the map it is. That's the SLAM algorithm, simultaneous localization and mapping. That involves learning the model and using it. Okay, we won't get into that, but you know, at least that's very useful for robotics. Right? Okay, we'll stop here.